We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You're listening to From the Chair, and I'm your host, Mike Hamilton. Join us each episode as we talk to athletic directors from across America. We're going to talk about topics like leadership, career development, issues of the day, and I can promise you we're going to have some fun along the way, too. So sit back, listen in, and let's dive in. Let's go.
All right, welcome into this week's episode. Rick Hart, the athletic director at SMU. Rick, thanks for being with me.
Thanks, Mike. The theme music really got me in the right mood, so appreciate you setting the tone there.
You know, it's interesting. We probably need to evaluate that every now and then. When we started this whole thing, Rick, it was like, hey, let's sort of have kind of a jazz feel or something like that. I don't know if that met the mark or not, but that's what we've got. So,
hey, I think it's going to be a high bar to reach. That was great. Thank you.
All right. Well, hey, look, when I get ready for these podcasts, a lot of times, certainly, you know, I talk to the guest in advance just to not, you know, have them see that I'm not going to try to surprise them or anything like that. But also, I read some past press clippings. I watch videos, look at Twitter accounts, so on and so forth. And this is going to be probably an interesting one for you in some ways. I went back and watched your opening press conference from SMU, which I think has now probably been 10 years ago, and some of the post press conference questioning. And one of the questions in there was just the notion of you having been from a family of athletic administrators, right? And your grandfather, longtime administrator, was the athletic director of Louisville and Missouri, Southern Conference commissioner. Your dad, obviously, one of the most respected athletic administrators in college athletics with his time as AD at East Carolina and FSU in Tennessee, and then yourself at Chattanooga and now SMU. And you may or may not recall that in your answer to the question back in the day was that you really hadn't thought about that you just got as a career choice as you were growing up. It was more about just, hey, doing life, and that was what your life looked like. But I'm curious to take a step into that for a moment because – as you know, there are literally just a handful of families who have two or three generations who have been involved in this enterprise. And the Hart family is one of those families. So give me some perspective on what that looked like growing up, being around it, and when you did sort of, you know, click the button and say, hey, you know what, this may be something I want to do as a career path.
Yeah, well, that was a good kind of framing of the topic. I do recall that conversation and have been asked about it over the years. And, you know, my perspective has changed candidly as I got started in this profession. You know, that was something that I didn't fully embrace because I was concerned that that would somehow take away from my journey and my credibility. You know, there was, I think probably I was overinflating it, but, you know, I had a sense that maybe people thought that I was, I had the opportunities I had received simply because of that lineage and not based on merit. But later I learned to embrace it and fully embrace it now. Very proud of it. My grandfather, as you mentioned, started it and as a student athlete, a coach, an administrator. And what I really, Mike, you touched on it, but yeah, growing up, I didn't think about it as a vocation. It was a way of life for me and for my family. But as I had to contemplate career, and it wasn't really probably until my sophomore year of college that I seriously started to consider this as a career path and started to have those types of conversations with my dad and my grandfather. And then made a decision to join the family business, so to speak. And it was a great way to grow up, you know, going to camps, being around a college campus and student athletes, and even going back to my dad's days coaching high school basketball. My mom was a teacher. So, you know, just that environment, I thought it was a great way to grow up as a kid. And then again, later I realized the why behind it, you know, the impact that they were having as a coach, as a teacher, as an administrator on these young men and women. And that was something that I wanted to pursue, to combine those passions for learning and education and sport. And so that was what took me on this journey. And now, you know, we've been able to raise our family in a similar environment. And I think they've benefited from many of the same experiences. And my son, Trevor, has been working in our athletics department. He started when he was in high school, actually. He's a student at SMU. My daughter's a freshman. And so we will never maybe have the breadth that the White family has, you know, but we're going to try to stay vertical, and there's no pressure on Trevor, but, you know, maybe there's a fourth generation. If we can keep that going, no one can catch us. So we do take some pride in that.
That's awesome. What's Trevor's interest right now in terms of the, you know, there are many different pathways you could take within the college athletic specter. What's he most interested in right now?
You know, great question. He's a senior at SMU. He'll graduate in May. When he wanted a summer job in high school, and so I started him off in the, you know, grounds, which is where I got a start. Told him if he could work in the 100 degree heat in Texas out there, working on our fields and on the grounds, then maybe next summer he'd move inside. And so then he moved into marketing, and he's been working with our marketing department for about 4 years as a student.
That's fantastic. I'm just curious, did you start working in athletics when you were a student at North Carolina, or was it after you finished there?
I did. I was at North Carolina. I went home and got a summer job at East Carolina, and again, was working with the regulators out in the field and outside getting our hands dirty. But it was a summer job. And again, that piqued a little bit of my interest. And then I remember the year before my junior year, that's when I started to talk to my father and my grandfather about this. And my dad said, you need to go, when you go back to school, you need to go find the athletics director, John Swofford, and you need to share with him your interest in this profession and ask him if you can get involved. And so that's exactly what I did. And John got me started as a student at North Carolina, volunteering my time in a number of different departments throughout their athletics program.
It'd be interesting to look at a timeline at some point, Rick, about the, you know, as it relates to the different things that your granddad and your dad and you have experienced in college athletics, and how different things are now, you know, and how things have changed. I was thinking about, you know, so my opportunity at Tennessee started in 2003, and that doesn't sound like a long time ago in some ways. And for some listening to this, that's 20 years ago. So that's a long time. But, you know, even then, you know, Twitter was just really starting to take off. Candidly, even email, the proliferation of email was only like, we were only 10 years into that in terms of active use, right? You know, Coach Dickey was still, if he had a complaint from a donor, they were sending a letter in, and he replied to the letter and then sent the letter back out. And so there's this, you know, 7, 8, 9 day transition between complaint and answer, right? And now it's live in real time. So it'll be interesting to see as your career continues to evolve, and then hopefully your son's, you know, times are changing, right?
Yeah, they are. They always have. I think, you know, to your point, we can, and we do, you know, we sit here and we think about how different things are even from 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago. And it's significant. But yet you go back farther than that. And that's been the constant, is that change and that evolution. Perhaps not at the pace it is today, and perhaps not quite the way things are converging at this time. But, and I think that's healthy to remind ourselves of that, and that really everything's going to be more than okay. You know, again, this is a vocation. Those of us who are in it, and Mike, you know, you're in it. It's a tough job. It's not probably what people from the outside think it to be, but it's a very rewarding job. And overwhelmingly, despite the changes that have occurred and the changes that are on the horizon potentially, overwhelmingly, we are shaping the lives of young men and women, sons and daughters, in a way that only higher education and sport can do. And it's a really powerful thing, and it's a really great thing for the student athletes in our programs.
Hey, man, you led right into where my next line of questions going. The student athlete. And when you sat down on a panel at the CFP this year in Indianapolis, and you talked a little bit about just preparing student athletes for life and where we are in that pipeline of activity and growth, and how today's changes, you know, and I think you were referring to NIL and portal and all the different kinds of things that are going on around us now, how they factored into this concept of what is a key tenet of college athletics, and that's preparing student athletes for life. What has changed or is changing that you feel like is informative and helpful and uplifting in terms of the things that are around us today and the narrative that has changed? And then what are the things that concern you about a lot of the changes that we've seen over the last 18 months and maybe some that we see ahead of us in the next 18 months and how we approach that?
Well, I think on the positive side, the student athlete experience has never been better in terms of the care we're able to provide for them, the resources we're able to surround them with, and the way we're able to do that across all of our sports. And I'm generalizing, but, you know, I think it's, again, it's a great thing. Now, it's challenging, we know that, but that's, you know, the rigor and getting outside of your comfort zone, that's part of the lessons that we teach through sports that are going to prepare them, you know, for what's ahead, because that's a part of everyday life. And so, not saying easy when I say student athlete experience is as good as it's ever been, but certainly I think, again, just the way the experience we're able to provide to them on and off the competitive surfaces has never been better. And, you know, I think the relationships that we're able to forge with them and some of the ways now that we can communicate, you talked about social media, and certainly there are perils with that realm, but also what a great opportunity to celebrate people that we've not ever had before, and to tell their stories, and to really help the community understand who our student athletes are beyond just their sport. So I think there are a lot of positive things, and even in NIL, again, the intention, if you will, you know, Mike, for years and years, really the basis of trying to provide those opportunities was that so that our student athletes could capitalize on skills and talents and abilities in ways that other students could, whatever that means, beyond their sport. I'm not sure what that's what NIL represents today, and we can talk about that when we talk about some of the challenges or concerns. But we do have student athletes, as most institutions do, who are taking advantage of the spirit of NIL. You know, we have an artist, student athlete, who up until July 1st of last year, you know, wasn't able to show his art at galleries and sell it and commission paintings and, you know, all kinds of things like that. So, again, I think overwhelmingly it's positive and it's good, and things are really, we're getting the outcomes and the results that we desire And sometimes we just focus on either those outlier situations or those things that represent maybe 5% or less of what we deal with and what's occurring. And we tend to kind of broad brush the industry. Again, not to say there aren't concerns. I know that's the second part of your question, but I think anytime you're doubting that, get out and get around the student athletes, you know, go to practice, travel with them, have a meal with them, have a conversation with them. And it really will be uplifting and reinforce a lot of the things that, you know, why we do what we do.
Yeah. So talk to the flip side of it for a minute. You alluded to maybe some, I'm reading into it that you have a few concerns about the NIL, the possibilities that it might be more, might result in negative, some negativity, right? And that's not the right way to say that, but you know what my question is. So
yeah,
I'm curious.
Well, I do, yeah. Well, I think in terms of concerns, to me, it's more, you know, the system, if you will. And by that, I mean, we're always going to have concerns or challenges here and there. But I think with anything, when it's systemic, that's really, you know, a cause for more thought and consideration about what we're doing. And to me, that's really, if I have a concern, it's where are we going in terms of our systems, our processes, our philosophies? You know, it's a membership organization. We talk about that a lot, and that's certainly true. But right now, there doesn't seem to be a lot of cohesion throughout the membership. And organizationally, you know, I think we've lost our way a little bit, and that's playing out. It played out through the reconstitution process and vote to where now each division has an opportunity to rethink and reshape, you know, what we look like. And so, as you know, now the NCAA Division I Transformation Committee is taking that on. And, you know, I believe there'll be significant changes from that. So the good thing is I think there's an opportunity to get some of this back on track and to start to, you know, set a direction that is consistent, I believe, with where we all want to go. Maybe with a little more leadership, maybe with a little more accountability and clarity around what that looks like. And you know, but anytime you have major change, which is what we've both had and what is coming through this process, until you get to the other side of it, you know, there's reason for concern. But what you do is you get involved and you try to help shape it and direct it and guide it. And I trust and have confidence in the individuals on that committee. You know, they're colleagues, you know, many of them, as do I. And I think at the end of the day, they want the same thing we do. It's just going to take some time to figure out how we get there together and where we compromise and how we protect and preserve. At the end of the day, again, an unbelievable collegiate model, you know, where we provide these incredible educational opportunities, many of which wouldn't otherwise be available. And then, you know, we again teach these lessons that complement that formal educational experience and hopefully differentiate our student athletes as they go out into a very competitive work environment. So, you know, I'm an optimist, and I still believe again in what we do, and there's a way to get there. It's going to look different. But as long as we can preserve who we are and why we exist, then it'll just be the latest, you know, 2.0 or 3.0 or 4.0 model of what we do. And I'm optimistic we can get there together.
Yeah. So let me, realizing that these are nothing more than opinions, right? What's your thought on the outcome from the Transformation Committee ultimately? Do you think it's going to lead to further federation? Do you think it's going to lead to more controls or less controls around the things that we're talking about now? There are some school of thought among a handful of ADs I've talked to that think that there's even the possibility of privatization of football and basketball. Are you beginning to formulate opinions on where you think that might head at this point, or have any strong opinions one way or another on that subject?
Well, you know, my thoughts are just that, my thoughts. They're my opinions. Now they're informed, but they're speculative. But I would say, based on the conversations I've had, and and even maybe combined with what I'd like to see happen in some cases. I think a few things are becoming apparent, or likely, I should say, maybe not apparent, but I think it's likely, Mike, that we're much more deregulated than we are today and decentralized. You know, that a lot of that gets pushed, whether that's to Division One or a subdivision of Division One or the conference or the school, you know, whatever the appropriate level is, that's going to happen. I think we should explore federation. You know, I'm not ready to say any of these are, you know, I don't know the intended and unintended consequences yet. I think that's the part of the process that we're going through is to best determine that. But I think it's intriguing to think about that. Obviously, we need to think about how we govern and regulate all of our sports. Maybe we continue to do that, you know, in a broad way, and maybe it's more targeted. I mean, that makes sense to me. But those are all the conversations we need to have, and I think that are taking place, you know, as we try to figure this out. And it would be great if we could, you know, I think have an individualized look at it. You know, it may not be a one size fits all. Again, at the end of the day, how do we provide the best possible experience to every student athlete? And what does that look like? And how is that determined? And at what level do we decide that? You know, so I believe that's where things are headed. You know, there's too much separation right now between, you know, the number one, if you will, program or department in Division One and the number 356 or whatever the number is now. And, you know, that's created a lot of our problems. So we've got to fix that. You know, we've got to figure out where are the synergies, you know, where can there be, more cohesion and alignment around all the issues, whether that's, again, governance, enforcement, academic standards, scholarship, sports sponsorship, competitiveness, you know, whatever it is. And so I think, again, we have an opportunity to strengthen what we do and how we do it. And it's needed. You know, it was clear, if there's one thing that's clear, is couldn't keep doing what we were doing. You know, that's the definition of insanity. And we were all getting closer and closer to it. So, look, it's chaotic right now. I'm certainly not trying to sugarcoat any of this. It's chaotic. There's a lot of uncertainty. You know, there are a lot of things within collegiate athletics that are being questioned right now. But again, for those of us who are in it and living it day to day, there's a lot of good. It's not going to go away. We're going to figure it out. But the next, you know, 12 to 18 months are going to represent significant change.
You know, I think about you're spot on, by the way. I truly believe that. There have been some signal moments, and there are always things that are vacillating in the NCAA structure since really the beginning of the NCAA. You know, in my career, I've been in college athletics now since 1985, 86. And, you know, I think about the change in football television broadcast and how that significantly changed college athletics. I think about the expansion of the NCAA basketball tournament and how that changed college athletics. Scholarship limitations, those kinds of things. You know, many things along the way, right? And so I do think that what we're going through right now does not have to be cataclysmic. I think that it probably has led to conversations that have needed to occur for many, many years. And we're finally here to this place. I am curious of your thought because of your length of tenure in the college athletics as well. I believe that one of the things that we have failed in college athletics is our ability to describe the message, to deliver the message, and to describe to our public what this college experience for the student athletes actually is about. You alluded to it a minute ago in terms of preparing student athletes for life. And we've talked about that, but yet media and skeptics and literally just the general guy on the street, they tend to see college athletics in a different way from how we see it internal to the model. How have we missed that? I think I've got a theory, but I'm curious as to your theory on that.
Well, I'm interested to hear yours. I'll go first, but I want to hear your theory. Well, first of all, yeah, never let a good crisis go to waste, right? You know, we've got to take advantage, whether we like how we got here or not, agree with it, whether we like the messaging, agree with it, you know, it doesn't matter. In some cases, perception is reality. And again, we've arrived where we are, and we've got to fix it. So, and by the way, that was a nice way of calling me old when you said, as long as I've been in it, but you know, I think it's like a lot of things with the increased, television exposure, national exposure, revenues, that garners more and more attention. And then, the more attention something gets, and when you're only seeing one particular aspect of that experience, it gets politicized. It's certainly gotten politicized. And then you get agendas and egos and pride and all kinds of things that get involved that tend to maybe, skew the message or take you off point. Now, we again, as an industry, didn't do probably enough to mitigate that. And again, so now it's snowballed on us, and kind of we are who they think we are, if you will, and until we can demonstrate otherwise. And so I don't have a theory. Again, I'm interested in hearing yours in terms of how that happened or why it happened. But, I have been in it long enough to remember when, and I know this comes up from time to time, but it used to be we would go to the NCAA convention and everybody had a vote and you would get to kind of hear those perspectives and then you weighed in on it. It was much more membership driven as it relates to the practitioners. And I can even recall times when, speaking for myself, you would be part of those conversations and you might change your viewpoint on a particular topic or issue because, again, you had an opportunity to hear from the different voices and to really focus and contemplate, what it was you were looking at. So the collegiality was also much greater than it is today. Not to say at all that it's disappeared, because I enjoy great relationships with colleagues. But I think I'm getting off topic and maybe rambling a little bit here, Mike, but there's just, this has happened over a long period of time, I would just say. And so I don't think you can point to this moment, that moment. It was almost death by a thousand paper cuts to get us to where we are today, which is why we've got to pursue the significant changes that we're contemplating. But why don't you help to inform and enlighten the audience with your theory, though, because it'll be much better than what I just had to say.
No, I don't know that that's true, but I will say, I think, as a general rule, bureaucracies are not great communicators, right? And when we have, we live in a bureaucratic environment on college campuses, and the NCAA itself is a bureaucratic organization. And so you think about the proliferation of different kinds of institutions at the D1 level as an example, which you alluded to a minute ago, and the disparate, geographies and demographics and populations and goals and so on and so forth, it becomes really difficult to hone in on a message that becomes consistent, that's then delivered to the public. And then overlap that with, you view who your audiences are, and in some ways your consumers are, when you start talking about communicating. And I think that one of the things that we, our message to the public has generally been around entertainment, and we've talked about academics. Why has that fallen on deaf ears? I'm not exactly sure. I think part of it is escalation of salaries of coaches. Just to be candid, I can say that now, I'm in a different chair. I think that's part of it. And then I think that for a long time, we looked at through the lens of one of our consumers being student athletes in the context of providing them that educational opportunity, which is, as you and I both know, Rick, very, very significant. However, maybe in doing so, we have blinders on as to these small things, like the young person you referred to a minute ago that's an artist at SMU, and the fact that that person could not, hone their additional craft, show art, and sell that art was really like, does that really make sense in the end that we didn't allow that to happen? So it's all snowballed into where we are today. Now, that's probably not a cohesive theory. Those are things that I think have helped lead us where we are now.
No, you're right. There's no doubt about it. And you articulated it very well. In fact, when you use the word entertainment, just to add one, to reinforce a thought that contributes to that theory, I can remember, and I don't know how many years it was ago, but maybe it was a dozen years ago. I have no idea. But I was at an ACTA event, and Andy Geiger, who was then the athletics director at Ohio State, so it was probably longer ago. I think Gene's been there more than that. But, you know, he actually had, as part of Ohio State's kind of written mission or purpose, the word entertainment. And I think it, you know, we weren't supposed to say that word back then, you know, because even then it was almost taboo to acknowledge or recognize that we were in the entertainment business, because I think too many people wanted to hold entertainment and education as mutually exclusive pursuits, when we knew that wasn't true. But I think there was this fear that if we raised our hand and said we're in the entertainment business, that was going to whack us in the head. And so, you know, that's just another example of how I think we contributed to kind of maybe not owning or embracing who we are and who we were becoming and who we've become. But yet at the same time, trumpet and celebrate that the educational component of it is core to what we do and is absolutely, you know, a core principle and pillar of college athletics. You don't, it doesn't have to be one or the other.
No doubt, man. It is both. All right, this has been a great conversation. Let's close out with a couple of questions about SMU. I haven't asked you about your current job. Two things that I want to ask. First is, obviously, SMU has had a tremendous amount of success on and off through all the years. And I'm curious, this is a softball question, but I have to ask it. You know, you've got a lot of competition in the marketplace between professional franchises and then, candidly, a lot of different collegiate opportunities in the broader Metroplex, right? So what do you do to find your place in that schematic? And, you know, I know you've done the, you know, you had the D on the helmet and your Dallas's team, that kind of thing. But how are you finding your way into the public consciousness as it relates to following SMU athletics as a relatively small school, a private school in a very large market?
Yeah, it's a constant, you know, effort, you know, and it'll probably never be complete. You know, the great thing is we're in this incredible, vibrant city, and that's an advantage. There's no doubt about it. Yet, to your point, there's a lot of competition in sports and entertainment, and outside of sports and entertainment, just for people's time, their disposable income, their attention. And so, you know, we've got to work it from a number of angles. You know, I think we try to start, number one, with just a best practice approach. What can we learn from others like us, you know, who, you know, small privates and major metropolitan areas, collaborate? What's out there that maybe will fit us and who we are and help to move the needle in that way, so we don't have to reinvent the wheel, you know? And then you try to innovate. What can we do above and beyond that to enhance it, to complement it, that's unique to Dallas, that's unique to our market, or relationships that we have with alumni or with members of the community? But then I think, Mike, after you do those things, it's about authenticity. And by that, I mean, you gotta be a valuable member of the community. You know, you got to be present. You got to give back. You got to invite them to participate and show them that you care, just like you would with any relationship. And that's what we've probably worked the hardest on is trying to really connect with, you know, all the various communities within the Metroplex. And I will tell you that in the last 3 or 4 years, maybe, we've really started to get some traction. Number one, because it's a cultural effort, and anytime you're trying to influence or change a culture, that just takes time. Number one, you have to be realistic about that. And so I think part of it is the building blocks, you know, are now starting to add up and to see some results. But another one is just the mayor. You know, we got Eric Johnson became our mayor 4 or so years ago, and he has really embraced SMU and our role in Dallas, the institution, as well as the athletics program. It's not just talk with him. He means it. He's, again, all the things I said we're trying to be to Dallas, he's reciprocating and for and with us. And so that led to some of the co-branding that you alluded to, where we now use the City of Dallas logo with our logo, not all the time, it's a secondary mark, but to really reinforce that relationship and that we are Dallas's university and Dallas's team. And then it's not just a tagline, you know, that we go out into the communities where we recruit student athletes, and we put up billboards, part of our Born and Raised campaign, to really showcase to those communities, look, you can come to SMU, you can get a degree. You know, you should have that as a goal and a dream, because it can happen, and it does happen, and it did happen, because here's someone from your community who's living that right now. And so, again, I just think it's something you build on year after year, but it has to be authentic. And, you know, you have to have a genuine relationship in the community. You can't just talk about it.
Yeah.
Well, oh, hey, by the way, you should win too.
You should win.
Winning helps, by the way. Yeah. Because in Dallas, you can always choose a winner. There's somebody who's winning. And so you better win.
Yeah. That's spot on, man. This has been good. We could keep going, Rick. I want to be mindful of our time. You are always very thoughtful and measured in your responses. You provide candor. You give great answers and feedback, things to lead to further thought and questions. I appreciate that about you, and I have appreciated that about you for a long time. So just want to say thanks for joining me today.
Well, thank you, Mike, and thanks for your leadership. Thanks for having these conversations. You know, all of us need to continue to learn from one another and just also kind of know that we're going through this together. I think that's really important. And I've always appreciated your access and your values and the way you approach what you do. I can remember when I was at Chattanooga and trying to figure out which way was up. And, you know, you would always take my call. And when you were the big shot at Tennessee, and, you know, but you always treated me like a peer and had time for me. And I really appreciate that. I'll always remember that. So thank you as well.
Thanks, Rick. So you've been listening to From the Chair, and this week's episode has been with Director of Athletics at Southern Methodist University, Rick Hart, a guy who knows this industry very, very well. Third generation, and maybe a fourth is coming. We'll see what happens with Trevor along the way. Thanks for listening. You can follow us on YouTube each week. The podcasts are released on Wednesdays or wherever you listen to your audio podcasts, Spotify, Apple, the Varsity Network, or beyond. We'll see you next time. Have a good week.
Pony up.